Holiday magic is in the air, and DSW's got all the shoes to make your season extra merry. Believe, you've got parties to attend and lists to check twice, so DSW is taking care of the details, like gifts to make their eyes all aglow, styles that bring joy to your world, brands everyone wants, like UGG, Nike, Birkenstock, and more, and deals to make your budget bright. Find the perfect shoes for you and yours at a DSW store near you or DSW.com.
This holiday, BMW has reunited three members of the family at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. The Agile X3, engineered for any adventure. The plug-in hybrid X5, commanding the streets with unmatched presence. And the all-electric i4, charging into the future with impeccable performance. Hurry in to find what powers your journey at the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in, trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
Here we go. Thursday, December 12th. Tomorrow's Friday the 13th is what made me think of that. Highs today of 57, 62 tomorrow, 71 on Saturday, 75 on Sunday. Warming up to the mid-70s by Tuesday, then a chance for showers, and it cools off again, but not as cool as it is now. We are currently looking at about 41 degrees, maybe feeling like 35, depending on the wind. And Dane Ciolino joins us now, our friend, professor of law at Loyola, to talk about birthright citizenship, what former President-elect Trump wants to do, and what the Constitution says. Good morning, Dane. How are you?
Just fine. Morning, Tommy.
Boy, you know, this really does, if you look into this, kind of indicate that the history of the United States is complicated, and it's not clear-cut in terms of who's a citizen and who's not, going back to even Native Americans and the Chinese Exclusion Act. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Let's talk about birthright citizenship and what that is.
Yeah, it's enshrined in the 14th Amendment of the United States Constitution that was passed right after the Civil War in 1868. And it says that all persons born or naturalized in the United States and subject to the jurisdiction thereof are citizens of the United States and the state in which they reside. Fairly clear language that was intended to make sure that former slaves were citizens and couldn't be denied, among other things, the right to vote. Fairly clear at the time that it meant everybody born in the United States, and that's the way it's been treated for more than 150 or 60 or whatever the math is since its ratification.
Has this been challenged in court before by anybody?
There's a Supreme Court case from the early 20th century where the Supreme Court interpreted the language of the 14th Amendment to say what it says, which is essentially that if you're born here, you're a citizen, period. And it doesn't matter whether your parents were here legally or illegally, although that wasn't addressed in that specific case. You are not going to be denied citizenship because of the status of your parents. If they're here geographically and physically, then you are a citizen. Now, I mean, I get the normative arguments why we should deny citizenship to illegals. It's a potential problem that people can game that the system essentially and come here when they're pregnant and then all of a sudden give birth to a United States citizen. But the language is fairly clear. What the proponents of doing away with birthright citizenship argue is that language, quote, subject to the jurisdiction thereof, that if an illegal alien comes to the United States, they are illegal and they are not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States, and their children should be excluded from birthright citizenship. But the counter to that, which I think almost everyone who is a serious student of the Constitution believes, is that subject to the jurisdiction means subject to the laws. And we call illegal aliens illegal because the laws apply to them and they are not complying with them by being here. But that still makes them subject to the laws, and that makes their children United States citizens by birthright.
So just as if you're not a citizen and you're subject to the laws which say what you can't do, you're also subject to the laws that say what you can do, right? That's what you're saying? Go ahead.
Yeah, there are very few people who are physically present in the United States who are not subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. And that the classic example of that are diplomats. Diplomats have diplomatic immunity. They are not subject to the local laws. And their children, when born here, if they're working at an embassy, do not become United States citizens. An invading army is another classic example. If Canada were to invade Maine and some of the soldiers had children while occupying Maine, their children would not be United States citizens because invaders are not here subject to the jurisdiction of the United States. But and that's the only argument that people have made, that the illegal aliens are like invaders, and if they're like invaders, then they shouldn't be eligible for birthright citizenship.
So somebody texted in, birthright citizenship allows for anchor babies. That's a talking point. I get it. When it comes to the history of the United States, a lot of people like it to be sanitized and they like it to be clean, but it really is not. 14th Amendment ratified after these people that were brought over and held as slaves were free to make them citizens. Native Americans, it wasn't until 1924, as I understand it, that Congress finally granted citizenship to all Native Americans born here in the U.S., who were, of course, here before any of us were. Then you got a case of the Chinese Exclusion Act, which I don't think would stand constitutional muster today, would it?
I can't imagine it would.
So I guess what I'm saying, Dane, and we can take a break here and pick it up when we come back. A lot of people like to think the history of the United States is nice and clean and you can sanitize it into whatever you want. But it's not. It really isn't. And at different times, the Constitution, some people have morphed it or either through executive order or through congressional acts, have kind of changed it to exclude or include whomever they wanted. And my problem with that, and I think you probably feel the same way, is that once you start bending the rules of the Constitution to suit your needs, you got to be careful, because next time it might be somebody bending them that does not agree with you or that you don't agree with. So let's take a break. We'll pick it up here. We'll come back. We're talking to Dane Cialino with Loyola. He's a professor of law at Loyola here answering or talking about the birthright citizenship thing. You can text me your thoughts on the Oakman Art Jeweler Talk and text line at 504-260-1870. We'll also talk about birthright, however we want to refer to these people that are born here. If a parent comes here illegally and has a child, who can be deported?
I'm Jenna Fisher.
And I'm Angela Kinsey.
And together we have the podcast Office Ladies.
Just because we finished rewatching The Office does not mean we're going anywhere.
Every Wednesday, we'll be sharing even more exclusive stories from The Office and our friendship with brand new guests. Plus, you can revisit all the Office Ladies rewatch episodes every Monday with new bonus tidbits before every episode.
So follow and listen to Office Ladies on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
And if that happens, the child can't, because I think the child is a citizen. The family has a choice of taking the child with them or not. But I don't think you can deport the child that was born here. So then what do you do with the kid? I'll ask the audience that as well. 620 now, traffic, WWL. It is 626. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our good friend Dane Cialino, professor of law at Loyola, about President-elect Trump's idea to do away with birthright citizenship. And we'll talk about the process involved in that in a second. But I get this text, Dane, about anchor babies, and that comes to, are they really anchor babies or not? Because it might be, and I don't know what that term means. I know it's a pejorative term, but if the person that is born here, according to the 14th Amendment, is a U.S. citizen. Now, the U.S. can decide to deport their parents if they want, can't they? If the parents are here illegally, that doesn't necessarily...
Yeah, absolutely.
That doesn't
right,
anchor...
Absolutely.
The only person that anchors to the country is the person that's born here, accurate?
Correct.
Okay. So at that point, if we were to start mass deportations, and I'm just talking about what the Constitution, what the law says, barring an amendment, and let's talk about the processes involved. If President-elect Trump decides, okay, you know what, you're not in the country legally, you got to go, he can't, unless the parents opt for that, deport the child that was born here legally, can they?
That's correct.
So at that point, practically, and this has nothing to do with the Constitution, but if the United States were to decide to do that, they would have to come up with something to do if the parents say, no, we'll go back, we want the children to stay here, to do with these children that are now parentless, correct?
That's right, and the Borders are has been on TV saying that if the child who is a legal citizen wants to go back to wherever with the parents, they'll give them a ride too.
So how does that relate to the so-called Dreamers? Those people were brought here as children, mm-hmm. as I understand it, not born here. That's different and distinct from being born here actually, right?
That's correct. I mean, those people are essentially undocumented aliens who have just been here for a very long time. But again, that's there's a path to citizenship, of course, for those people and for anyone else. But the whole question is whether the Dreamers should be required to follow that same path.
So there's got to be a line somewhere in the law. That's what laws do. And technically, just to be clear here, if a woman is at the border and gives birth and the child is born, I guess, if it's still in utero when she crosses the border, and I'm not trying to be silly here or anything, but if she gets across the border and the child is actually born here minutes later, then that child is a U.S. citizen. Accurate?
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. So what would it take to change that if for people that are texting in saying amend the Constitution? Okay, when was the last time we amended the Constitution, and what is that process? What does it look like?
Yeah, by design, it's a very complicated process. And you know, that's why I actually enjoy these discussions with you, Tommy, about constitutional interpretation, because, you know, it hits both sides. I mean, people want to read the Constitution in a way that suits them at a particular point in time. And that's what President Trump is doing. He would like to do away with birthright citizenship through an executive order because it would suit his policies and problems that he sees now. But that's not the way you change the Constitution by executive order. You do it by constitutional amendment, which it takes super majorities of states and Congress. There are two different ways to do it, but it's just not easy. And it's by design not easy.
So if the President Trump takes office and signs an executive order, what happens then? The people that are opposed to it take him to court, and then it goes to the Supreme Court to see if he can do this by executive order or not, and then it comes to a constitutional interpretation?
Yeah, and it'll be simple. That executive order will be declared unconstitutional, and people born in the United States are going to be citizens of the United States, just like the text original understanding and application for more than 150 years of the citizenship clause, you know, has been through.
Well, I enjoy the conversations too, Dane, and thank you for suffering this fool gladly. You have a Merry Christmas, Happy New Year if we don't talk to you, all right?
You too, Tommy.
Thank you, sir. All right, we'll take a break, come back, talk to Jeff Palermo about LSU football transfer portal and more right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Dave Cohen. 6:45, quarter till 7, chilly morning. We're in the 40s. Feeling like the 30s in some places, going up to 57 today. Jeff Palermo joins us, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director. He's got a story that posted at WWL.com about the NUS bus staying put. How you doing, Jeff Palermo?
I am doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I'm okay. Tell me about Garrett Nussmeier and his decision and what's behind it.
Well, I don't think it's that big of a surprise. I think we were hearing rumblings, you know, especially after LSU went through that tough stretch there when they had lost three in a row and Nussmeier didn't particularly play well in a couple of those games, that it became apparent at that point that he might need another season as the starter. You know, he's been at LSU now for 4 years, so he certainly had a decision to make. And not only had he been at LSU for 4 years already, but you look at this draft class, it's not a particularly strong draft class. So there's the possibility that, you know, he could have gone out there and during the individual workouts and during the pro days and at the combine, and once he would go there, that, you know, he might perform fairly well and end up finding himself being drafted at least in the second day of the NFL draft. But this is a kid that's been very committed to LSU. You know, his dad is a coach in the NFL, is an assistant coach. So I think he just thought, hey, it's wiser for me to come back another season. And all you have to do is kind of look at the history of starting quarterbacks at LSU that came back for their second season, and they've done very, very well. They've won Heisman trophies and Jaden Daniels and Joe Burrow. So I'm sure that will be a storyline that we'll talk a lot about during the summer, knowing that he's going to be back for a second season and can build on really what's been a very good first season as a starter.
What would he have to do to up his game? Because I know Will Campbell's leaving. Talk about what's going to happen with the offensive line and the areas that he really needs to show some improvement.
Well, I would say he is kind of taking a bit of a chance here to come back, because he doesn't necessarily know what is going to be around him. Mm-hmm. You just mentioned it. You're losing Will Campbell. There's the potential you're losing up to four starters on that offensive line. One of your, you know, two of your favorite targets are moving on in Mason Taylor, who's going to the NFL, and C.J. Daniels, who's in the transfer portal. So and Kyron Lacy is moving on to the NFL. He's out of eligibility. So three of your top four targets in the passing game are moving on. So the offense is going to look a lot different. And we'll see what Brian Kelly also does with the offensive coordinator position. I don't know if it's, you know, completely guaranteed that Joe Sloan will be the OC, considering that Brian Kelly got more involved in the offensive play calling towards the end of the season. So there's always the possibility that there could be a change there. So Nussmeier is certainly he's taking a leap of faith that the coaching staff is still going to be able to build a really good offense around him, because it is going to look much different personnel-wise next season.
Yeah, as a fan, we think we know, and I'm not talking about you, I'm talking about me. We think we know, and we don't. And I can imagine Brian Kelly and other coaches listening to some of the things that we say and thinking, oh, please, really? But when it comes to the whole offensive operation with LSU, they got to get a little bit more efficient about getting these plays in and getting them called and getting some kind of momentum, don't they?
Well, I think what we saw here towards the end of the season, especially with Brian Kelly with the play sheet, I think things did get a little bit bogged down. But I think the biggest thing we've seen with Brian Kelly more involved in the play calling is that there's been just more of a commitment to running the football. Mm-hmm. And when you look at the pass attempts that Nussmeier had, he had the second most pass attempts in school history. I mean, there were just games where LSU abandoned the run for the most part. It ended up working out for them against Ole Miss, but they had other games where they just didn't run the ball, and it came back to hurt them, or they didn't have success. And that's the other thing. I think next season, one of the things LSU is really going to strive for is just to be much more balanced on offense between the run and the pass.
Let me take a break. When we come back, we'll talk about transfer portal and all of this mess, because it is a big, giant mess. And Tim and I were talking the other day, and it just seems like, man, when you look at what Phil Knight's done with the uniforms at Oregon, and now I don't know what the restrictions are with visits or, I don't know, with recruiting. Are there rules anymore, Jeff, or not, about who can visit where, when, or is it all now?
No, they can, wherever they want to visit and when and how and all that and what they want to eat. There's not really not many rules.
Wine and dine, do whatever you want to do, just like a free agent in the NFL, pretty much?
Yes, exactly it. Exactly
Family
it.
Family members, too, if you want?
Oh, sure. Bring everybody. Bring the dog if you need to.
And get the dog a new collar, a new bed, get a car for mom or whatever it takes, right?
Yeah, exactly.
And which means whoever's got the deepest pockets can have the big team. And we're thinking Oregon might have a dynasty into the decades until they fix all this mess. 6:50, 10 till 7, traffic now, WWL. 6:56, 4 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Garrett Nussmeyer staying at LSU. We're talking to Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. He's got a story up at Odyssey.com about that exact thing. Jeff, I was asking you before the break about, you know, visits and what you can do with recruits, what you can't. Those days are all gone, so now it's just the Wild Wild West free-for-all, like free agents in the NFL. And I heard Brian Kelly on our sports last night, I don't know if it was your story or not, but talking about things have changed and people got to step up, right, with money?
Well, no doubt about it. You know, he made the big plea a couple weeks ago, saying, "Hey," when he talked about being aggressive in the transfer portal, and you know, it's great that we have you know, some really dedicated donors to LSU, but they need to broaden the base, if you would, right? They need a little bit more of the people to pitch in, and he talked about it again yesterday. Of hey, you know, it's we got a good base here, but it can always be a little bit better. But yeah, you know, it is a different game. It's so much about money. I mean, when Bill Belichick took the job at North Carolina, based on the reports, one of the things that they were really discussing there at the end before he took the job was how much money is North Carolina going to put towards the NIL efforts, and it's got to be at a number that's going to allow North Carolina to be competitive. And I think the other thing that you've seen here, I mean, just look at the college football playoff this year. You got schools like Arizona State and you got schools like SMU that are in it. And, you know, before it was really just a handful of schools that were really, could really put money towards making sure you get recruits and you're able to build. And now with the NIL, I think there's a lot of rich alums out there that realize, hey, I can really, really have an impact on my alma mater's football team. And I think that's what you're kind of seeing with more and more schools being able now to go out there and put up a good number as far as NIL and recruit kids there.
I was thinking this through, and I'm thinking about Phil Knight with Oregon. I'm thinking about T. Boone Pickens and the involvement he's had with Oregon State and his deep pockets and trying to make them, huh?
What'd I say?
Oregon State?
Said Oregon.
It's still in the Pacific Northwest. Both of them orange and black, though, I think, right? Oregon State and...
Yeah, right.
I don't know what I'm saying. Anyway, and his efforts to spend as much as he could. It would not surprise me to see... well, T. Boone Pickens is dead, but I'm sure his heirs are as... what's the word I'm thinking of? As excited about Oklahoma State, I don't know if they are or not. Bottom line is, those with the bigger pockets, the deeper pockets, are going to wind up winning this, right? I mean, they're going to build the dynasties. Is that too?
Well, we'll see. I mean, we've seen it in professional sports. I mean, the New York Yankees and Los Angeles Dodgers spend a lot of money every year, but they don't win it every year.
That's true. Thank you. Appreciate your time, Jeff. Interesting insight. Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network News Director. We'll come back, talk to Hank Tierney, Shaw head coach, about their appearance in a state championship game.